Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast episode 222. It's just me and Dave.
Yep. Nick couldn't make it today, so we have a puppet sitting in for him.
Right. We do have his picks. He did get a chance to read. He did give us his picks, yeah. Which Dave then stole one.
I usurped it.
So I'm guessing it one of the picks.
I've annexed it.
But usually we're guessing it both, so we're one off the Nick missing.
Yep. I think we could have, of the two, could we have guessed them both? I think
We could absolutely have guessed them.
Okay. We're all kind of creatures of pattern here. I don't mean this is a knock against Nick. You could guess my picks if I weren't here either.
Actually, that's not true. You sometimes throw a wild card.
This week is one of those ones.
You're the one of the three of us who throws in a wild card. You'll pick a random issue of Green Lantern. That never happens with me.
That is true. I will randomly read some stuff that I haven't read in a while.
Yeah.
I was trying to make the case, Randy, that you could do the podcast yourself and just kind of guess for us.
No. You could do the podcast yourself and guess for me and Nick.
Right. Here's me with a wild card pick.
I believe if any one of the three of us could pick everybody the pick every week, you'd be able to do it. If we were doing,
and here's Randy with another Miss Marvel. Woo, shocker!
If the podcast was to be about which books I hate each week, you could easily do that.
Yeah, yeah. Let's chime in.
You guys could make those picks really easily.
So we just saw the new trailer for Aquaman. What are we thinking, people? Nick, into it? Randy, not so into it. Moving on.
Dave's one-man podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
I knocked it out in about 5 minutes.
It's like that Ultimate Live bit where it was like the McLaughlin group.
Yes.
It's a reference nobody's going to get.
Yeah, well.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. All right. Aged people do.
All right. Moving on to store news. First of all, we had our first Easy Tiger game night this week, which was kind of fun. We did that down at 6th Street.
Yep.
We just brought a bunch of games. I taught a bunch of people to play games. And
tell them what you had, Randy, for food there. Easy Tiger's food is delicious.
I was at Easy Tiger for 4 hours because the original plan was for five to eight. Okay, right. I was there for 6 hours. I was there for 5 hours.
Okay.
So
and you were like, well, this place serves amazing food. Maybe I should grab a little snack.
So when
while
I got
I'm sitting
there,
around,
I had planned to have dinner there. So I got there, I set up, and I grabbed my favorite, the pastrami sandwich.
Yep.
And a Dr. Pepper.
Yep.
A little caffeine. And then I was there. And I was there for 4 more hours after
yep.
that. So
what are you going to do, not eat something?
No, of course not. And also, they have that spiced cider on tap from Austin East Ciders, which is amazing.
Mm.
So by the time I was done, my total was 2 ciders, a Dr. Pepper, a pastrami sandwich, an order of their beef jerky, which is made in-house, is really good.
Yep.
And one of their amazing pretzels with beer cheese.
Yep.
And I could have eaten more.
Yeah, that place is the hotness, and yeah. People should just go in general, but they should also, next time we do something with them, they should obviously go out again.
Yeah. I don't know if we'll have one in September or not, but we are starting in October, Monday, October 1st, actually. We will be doing a game night at their new north location at the Link.
Yep.
So that'll be fun.
You know, we ate there, just a couple weeks ago before one of the Master Pancake Theater at the Alamo Draft House, uh-huh. And I bet I hadn't eaten there in, a couple years. And so we split a few sandwiches among us, and it was so good, it was ridiculous.
Everything was good.
Yes, I approve of new ones and game places, gaming opportunities.
D&D 101 continues in September. We'll have Saturday, September 1st, Sunday, September 2nd,
yep.
And then also Sunday, September 16th. You can sign up for those. We have room for six people at each event. And I believe we have room for everybody, so pass that word along if you have people you know who are like, oh, I always want to play D&D. Play D&D. $10. You dice in a dice bag in 3 hours with a DM.
Yep. It's nice to kind of... Sometimes we have people sometimes come in who are like, my son wants to try D&D, or I want to try D&D and I don't know anything about it, or even I played it once or twice and I'm kind of confused, or I haven't played it since high school or whatever.
Or even D&D is of the devil and I'm going to burn this place
down. And, we can't always point them to the Adventures League program, but the Adventures League is not like... It's not, tailored for newbies. You're jumping into a story. You got to kind of absorb a lot fast.
Yeah, and we try to make it as new player friendly as possible. But, yeah, you're right.
Right. It's just not, like, Yeah, it, like, if you are specifically feeling a little bit confused or intimidated by it, it's a little, it might be a little difficult to jump in, even though our DMs are great. So it's nice to kind of have something where, like, very often when somebody has come in and asked me about some certain questions lately, and I'm like, I have the perfect answer for you. It's D&D 101.
Yeah, that's nice. Labor Day sale coming on Monday, September 3rd. Star Wars X-Wing 2nd Edition demo coming Saturday, September 8th, about a week before that game releases. Batman Day, Saturday, September 15th. We'll have free giveaway comics for kids and adults, plus paper masks you can buy. Starfinder Munchkin launch weekend. That's Saturday, September 22nd. Come out, play a new Starfinder Munchkin. Possibly win the expansion. Definitely get some promo cards, bookmarks.
A lot of stuff. They were playing Munchkin. They were doing the other Munchkin demos this Sunday, and it sounded like they're having a blast back there.
Yeah, and they're doing another one this Sunday. So you can come out from 1 to 3 and play.
Okay, that's just too much Munchkin. Throw it out.
I don't know if we're allowed to say what license it is, but it's a pretty fun license.
It is a pretty fun license, yes. One that I would not quite really have expected them to do.
But it fits so well.
It does fit. It's ready. It's like a serious license, but open for parody.
Yeah, definitely. So people can come out and play test that on Sunday. Seemed like they had a lot of fun when they were doing it. So.
Yeah.
And then finally, closing out the month, we will have the Magic Guilds of Ravnica pre-release weekend, our first ever weekend of pre-releases. So one on Saturday, September 29th, the night of, and two on Sunday, September 30th. No one escapes magic. All right, moving on to the actual news. There's not a ton this week, but there's some interesting stuff. First, Castle Rock was renewed for season 2. This is exciting for those of us watching Castle Rock, and those of us in the room who have watched an episode,
and need
to get around to the rest of it at some point.
Do you know what I'm watching instead of Castle Rock?
It's not Game of Thrones, because you still have my Blu-rays.
Yep, you want to keep going?
It's not. No, go ahead.
But what it is ironic. I randomly decided to watch the other night. I think it's just because I saw it on Hulu, and I was like, wait, oh yeah, I'd meant to watch it the other...
Is it Stephen King's The Golden Years from the 80s?
No, but you're in the ballpark.
Okay, go ahead.
It's Stephen King's It, the 90s miniseries.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, I guess I saw the new movie twice in theaters, and
yep.
Like it was good, but also I thought some of it, the scares were kind of on the cheap end of things, and
yep.
And I actually, in my memory at least, the 90s miniseries, whatever its kind of TV-like qualities were, was an overall better production. And
really?
Yeah, that's my sense of it. I mean, first of all, it's a more expansive production because it's both the kids and the adults' stories simultaneously, as it was in the book.
I finally saw the movie and I actually really liked it.
Oh, okay. So the vibe of it is kind of, I'm going to say, a little bit of like TV Twilight Zone-ish, you know, a little larger than life, but well-drawn characters within that.
Okay.
What was the thing I was going to bring up? Obviously, there's some special effects that are lacking, and I'm going to say, bless Harry Anderson, his dramatic acting is a little...
I forgot Harry Anderson was
larger than life.
Does he do stage magic?
He's Richie Tozier, grown up as and like kind of, you know, goofy DJ guy.
Does he do magic?
Actually, weirdly, I'm about an hour or so in, or like no, I'm only like 40 minutes in. He is not. He's not shown yet.
Oh,
they kind of are slowly introducing the.
You hide
the
Harry
adults.
Anderson. You pull it out.
It's an old game of hide the Harry. but it's the you know it's a it's the recruitment phase, and
yeah.
I think I'm just coming up on.
So
John Ritter is not like, you know, like an accomplished thespian.
Wait,
but
John Ritter and Harry, did they think they were making a comedy?
John Ritter plays the fat kid. I can't say his name, but
is John Goodman in this too?
Yes. No. No. The other notable name in it is, and by the way, what I was going to say is John Ritter actually I think has slightly better dramatic chops.
Sure.
And then. The lady who's played Clark Kent's mom on Smallville, I'm just blanking on her name.
Annette O'Toole,
she's the grown up Bev.
Okay.
Anyway.
So here's what I'm saying, David. I don't want to judge how you spend your free time or how you consume your entertainment, and that is a lie, obviously. I want you to consume the proper entertainment at all times.
Yeah.
I am almost certain that a given episode of Castle Rock is better than the entire It miniseries.
I don't know that that's true. I'm finding it very satisfying to revisit.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Now, I know some people who like think it's like just super campy and like trashy, but but I think it's like the same people who, you know, are like the same kind of voice that it was like, oh yeah, the original Star Trek is just like a joke, those special effects are so silly, how could you take any of it seriously? I'm like, yeah, if you kind of can't contextualize things, I don't want to hear your opinion.
Fair enough. Dave doesn't want your opinions.
But so far so good. We'll get to it as I get to some of the dodgier Pennywise special effects later on.
So anyway, for those who are excited about the It miniseries, I'm sorry to tell you that there will not be a new one. But Castle Rock will have a second season.
Yep. Well, they are doing another It movie.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
So how long is the season going to be, or do they know?
I don't know. It's 10 or 13. It's
okay.
It's reasonable sized. So, other TV news. Watchmen is officially a go at HBO. The Damon Lindelof.
I thought it already was officially a go.
They were making the pilot, but they haven't officially put it on the schedule and everything.
Okay,
yet. But it's on schedule for 2019 with the tagline "Nothing ever ends."
Okay,
which is of course a reference to what Dr. Manhattan tells Adrian.
I'm sure you know, could only be considered darkly, ironically, painfully funny. But if Alan Moore were to observe it,
yeah,
he's like. That's a perfect distillation of the corporate mentality.
Yeah.
Endlessly recycling the same thing until it's dead and ground, and then you still sell its remains.
What's funny is, Alan Moore had a sequel in mind for Watchmen. Like, he was going to do more of this.
Yeah.
So his objection to this is not that no one should have ever done it. His objection is, only I should have done it. Which seems to me completely egotistical.
Yeah, you know what?
And fails to understand how comics work.
He's an egotistical guy.
Yes, he is.
When you write the greatest comic, you get to be egotistical. It just comes with it.
That's fair.
I'm still interested in the series.
I'm very interested in the series. Damon Lindelof, I know he's controversial. I know some people do not like Lost.
Yep.
Some people didn't like Leftovers. Some people don't like Prometheus, and those people are right. That movie's terrible.
Yep.
Lindelof has his quirks and his flaws, but he's an interesting writer.
I was looking through, you know, like the various episodes that Lindelof wrote from Lost, and I was thinking, man, when that show was like on, it was so on, it was ridiculous. Like, I think, you know, some of the best TV.
Yep.
And you know, honestly, even if it was for that alone, I'd say I honestly is shot. Take a shot at it. Who's the guy who worked on, like, co-wrote, like, some of the Transformers movies, but who does, like, Star Trek Discovery
now. Akiva Goldsman.
Yeah, Akiva Goldsman.
Also Batman and Robin.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if that's just raw fear should be one's reaction. But everybody, you know, sometimes you get a project that's right for someone, that's their passion project, or they just click with, or whatever. He's at least got a shot at it, I think. And, you know, I want to see those HBO production values and stuff like that. Honestly, I'd probably watch it even if they bungle it.
I'm just curious what it's going to be. Is it actually going to be a sequel? Is it going to be an alternate world take?
Right. Like, will they still focus on those same characters, or is it going to be kind of other, you know, kind of unseen heroes from the same era?
The casting sheets indicate it's a different thing altogether, but that could be code.
And also, is it in a set era, or does it jump around? Because, you know, Watchmen spans, like 60 years or something like that.
I don't know. I'm fascinated to see what he's going to come up. And he wrote that letter that was like the Dr. Manhattan-style letter about, you know, his love for the property. Like Lindelof is definitely going to give this more of a... he loves it in a way that Zack Snyder didn't.
Right.
Zack Snyder loved it like a guy who discovered in his freshman lit course at college.
Right. Zack Snyder sort of revered it.
Yes.
But I don't think he had the chops...
But he didn't understand it.
It's true. No, it's true, though. Like,
he revered it. But he didn't get all the pirate shit.
Right.
That's what he would say. He's like,
Was cool when Watchmen, when Rorschach, who I think I'm going to say he calls Watchmen.
Watchmen, yeah.
When Watchman says,
when Watchmen,
you're locked in here with me.
Yes. Watchman is my favorite character in Watchmen. And I didn't understand the pirate stuff. I kind of skimmed that.
Yeah.
And there was all this texty stuff, and I only read stuff with pictures. But I feel like I got the gist, so I'm going to make the movie.
What was I going to say? I'm interested in the audaciousness sort of it. Like, that's why even, like, if it falls apart, I'm kind of curious. And in its weird way, I feel like Alan Moore might have more respect for this project. Now, he probably hates them all, almost equally. But, like, might have the more respect for this because it is trying to expand on it and not just spin it out into another... Or we think.
Here's
I guess we'll find out.
I know that Damon Lindelof in his secret heart, secret geek heart of hearts, is hoping that's going to be the case. I know, you know, he read this whole letter. He is definitely hoping that Alan Moore is going
to send him a little bit note, like
send him a little note.
You know, I could never say this publicly. DC would crucify the fans would crucify the hypocrisy.
Well
but
done,
nice
lad.
Done, mate. Yeah.
Yes, that is what Damon Lindelof is hoping for. And here's the thing, Damon, because I know you're listening. That's not going to happen. Alan Moore will never, never, ever admit that anything Watchmen is good. Never, ever.
Here is the heart I dug out of a squirrel earlier as part of a black magic spell. Your opening this envelope has triggered the magic. You'll be dead in a week. Of squirrel magic.
All right, moving on. They gave us the first trailer for Star Wars Resistance, the new animated series that's set just prior to Force Awakens. It is Poe Dameron's X-Wing unit, the Black Squadron.
Yep.
And apparently the focus is going to be on a character who is a spy for...
They seemed awfully young in it. Like, are they like his kid spies?
I think they're like 20-something.
Spy kids. Yeah.
But it seems like basically someone in his unit is maybe a traitor to the First Order.
Right.
And so there's a spy there who is operating as part of the unit, but he also is trying to figure out who the traitor is.
Right.
It's a good premise.
It's a good premise.
There's going to be some good fighter combat. The animation style, I'm not feeling it because I actually wound up coming around to the Rebels Clone Wars stuff and...
Well, it is like those. It's CG, but it's like cell shaded over it.
I
actually think I like the look a lot.
I liked it for the fighter pilot sequences. Like
looked a little weird with the people.
But with the people, looked weird to me.
Yeah, there. It might be one of those where they might ultimately be better off just going full CG.
Yeah.
But you know, I actually thought it looked all right in the trailers, and I'd kind of like to see a first episode to kind of judge it by. That said, I didn't feel like I was seeing enough new here to kind of really get me hyped up for it. And maybe, like, not enough nostalgic stuff either to kind of push whatever button I was hoping to.
Yeah.
Like, in a weird way, like, so they were, like, flying around in ships that I didn't recognize. I know they're going to be X-Wings and stuff in there, too, but maybe, were those, like, test pilot stuff?
It might have been, yeah.
But, yeah, you got a cast of scrappy underdog, rebel-type characters, some alien, some human. They looked all right.
I think for me that this is all on faith. Yeah. I've liked everything their animation unit has produced.
Yeah.
So I didn't think it was a great trailer, but I'm very excited to see what they come up with.
Yeah, I kind of have some faith in them to deliver.
Finally, we had news that Danny Boyle is not going to be doing the next Bond movie. The biggest news to me was that Danny Boyle was going to be doing a Bond movie, because I'd utterly forgotten that.
Yeah, honestly, I'd forgotten it too. It was certainly an interesting idea, and I think he would have made a, you know, that kind of more personal project, you know, a Bond that might have felt kind of different and maybe been edgier, maybe been more personal. I don't know what quite what he would have done with it, but it ain't happening. I don't know if that means that do they know who the next director, is going to be?
No, we just know who it won't be.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I think that Danny Boyle should go to Idris Elba, and they should make a new awesome spy franchise that has nothing to do with Bond.
That'd be all right.
That's my pitch.
I'd be down for it. Yeah. I support unnamed spy project starring Idris Elba, directed by Danny Boyle.
Good. Okay. The motion is carried.
Yeah. Let's see if we can get a title for it.
who owns Bond? Is it Paramount? Sony?
I don't know. Doesn't Disney own everything?
Yeah, it's possible. So listen, whoever owns Bond, because I know you're listening. doesn't matter what you're doing. Whoever could give the money to this project, because I know you're listening, because we speak directly to the power brokers in Hollywood as well, you should make
this... That's what
it's
like when you're a tastemaker.
Idris Elba, Danny Boyle thing happen. So you go ahead and do that. And you know what? Somebody write a nice note. You know what? Alan Moore, since I know you're listening, why don't you write a nice note to Damon Lindelof? Nobody else has to know. Just tell him you're proud of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good on you.
We've all seen...
That's all you got to say.
We've all seen... What is he, Australian?
I forgot.
Paul Hogan, because I know you're listening. Write a nice note, posing as Alan Moore, to David Lindelof. All right, we'll be back in a second with comics for the week.
One familiar cry.
We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, August 22nd. And, Nick, you want to start? Oh, right. You know what? I am going to start with Nick Specs because he's not here.
Yeah, it's true. Puppet Nick, let's see what we've got.
Hi, Nick. That's how he talks.
Yeah.
liked the Punisher number one because I love the Punisher. And even though the artwork is not always great, it's mostly storytelling issues. The actual look of it is pretty good. And the notion of Punisher versus Hydra, like going to war with Hydra and Roxxon and that kind of stuff. And Hydra's trying to get their country, Bagalia, turned into a legal country. And there's some fun stuff in here.
Yeah, that sounds that actually reminds me a little bit of the machinations of what originally started as like a Hydra wannabe, Cobra,
yep.
From G.I. Joe and their cool Cobra Island stuff back in the day. Now, this is the same writer who's been doing it for a while.
It is,
so.
Matthew Rosenberg. And so this picks up right from the War Machine stuff, and it feels like a good continuation of that.
When I was making the sign for it, the solicit said that it was something about how, you know, he might have lost the War Machine suit, but he's, you know, still got a taste for a big game or whatever. And I was
he's still a War Machine.
I inferred from that he was still going after the latest crime boss, but rather some big-name Marvel.
No, he has a vendetta with Baron Zemo now. But here's the weird thing. They're kind of moving the goalposts a little bit. You know, Punisher in Secret Empire was working for Evil Cap.
Oh, right.
And that's because Evil Cap promised he was going to bring his wife and kids back to life.
Yep.
Which I didn't quite buy, but whatever. So now the
I don't buy Punisher compromises his principles to make himself happy.
Yep. So the start of this says, during the Secret Empire, the deceptive evil Steve Rogers conscripted the Punisher to unknowingly do his dirty work. No, no, no.
That was not the story
that's
they told.
That's not what happened. Frank knew exactly what he was doing. He made a devil's bargain. So
are they paving over it a little bit?
They're paving over it a little bit so that basically they can have him.
Weirdly, I think I can kind of accept that. Like sometimes if you know you screwed up, you can go ahead and kind of fudge it a little bit. Yeah. Let's fix it.
So basically he's got this vendetta for Zemo for dragging him into it. So he's like going after Zemo, and Zemo's trying to be power player. And so it is. He's kind of the vigilante fly in the ointment of this big corporatist, evil company thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm liking it. It's a good first issue, and I, Nick, recommend it this week.
Nice. Good job, Nick.
I, Nick, also recommend Venom number 5, which has Venom doing stuff.
You know what? So here's the funny thing. Nick was like, I heard something big happens in Venom this week. I wonder what it is, and I see him flipping through it. And he tells me what it is, and I feel like I can say what it is because it's on the cover.
Yeah.
It's actually on the cover, and we noticed that afterwards, and I'm like, you know, Nick was like browsing through it, what happened? And I'm like, oh, it does show it on the front.
Yeah, Venom has wings.
He has wings. And at first, the way Nick told it to me, though, initially was Venom got a new power, and I was like, what is the power? And he said, he can fly now. And I said, that sounds like the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yes.
But then I saw the art for it, and I was like, oh, he has these kind of cool, organic, bat-like wings that look kind of like alien, like H.R. Giger kind of like Ted created wings, or a little bit like some kind of weird Spawn type thing, which sort of fits him. And I was like, okay, that's better. And I gather it had something to do with, you know, the symbiotes of the past and their true forms or whatever. But yeah, it actually looked kind of cool.
Yeah. So I, Nick, picked that book.
Uh-huh.
And I, Nick, also want to mention, since Dave and Randy won't, Mr. and Mrs. X, which has Rogue, Gambit, and Deadpool.
Why did Dave and Randy not want to mention that?
Well, they both hate Deadpool.
Right. Right.
Which, of course, I, Nick, think that makes a lot of sense. Even though I like Deadpool, I, Nick, think Dave and Randy are right, and Deadpool's kind of a dumb character.
You looked, I've sensed that you were on the cusp of change.
Yeah.
And sort of a moment of clarity.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it happened today.
Yes.
Puppet Nick.
It's weird that it happened today. but Nick, we appreciate that you have come around.
Still satisfying. Deadpool. You got one last pick in with Deadpool in it, and now you can kind of write him off from here on.
I, Nick, renounce Deadpool. This is binding and cannot be rewritten. And if I were to come back next week, and if I were to say I, Nick, am a big Deadpool fan, and those guys were crazy, that would be clearly some kind of mind control by Marvel or Fox or someone
else. The people should know that you're just trying, that you've been paid off.
Exactly.
And that it's just words.
My true feelings, Nick, as I am Nick Budd, are that Deadpool is just not a very good character.
Sucks hard.
Yeah, he's terrible. I agree, Nick. I think that's true. I think that's actually true.
I actually hadn't noticed how close your voice was to
his. It's very strange, yeah.
Do you know, I believe this is, by the way, how they extracted confessions during the Inquisition, because I believe this is almost exact technique, but with more torture. But I believe it was that level of authenticity.
Yes, yeah, I think that's about right. So anyway...
Thank you, Nick.
Yeah. So, Dave, my pick.
Yes.
Randy, since my voice sounds a lot like Nick's.
Right, yeah, yeah. It's just some kind of weird distortion.
Yeah, yeah. I actually, Beasts of Burden number one, Wise Dogs and Eldritch Men. This is a...
Have people, you know, I don't know if people have read, like, the Beasts of Burden stuff.
So Beasts of Burden is a there's a graphic novel that was originally a miniseries, and they've done a couple other, like, one-shots and miniseries. This is usually Evan Dorkin and Jill Thompson doing sort of painted art, and it is about the dog and cat wizards of Burden Hill.
Solving mysteries.
Yeah, solving mysteries, and it's
super.
It's,
but they're like supernatural. Are they always supernatural?
It's always supernatural.
Yeah, so it's almost this weird combination of like sort of like Hellboyish kind of slightly darker supernatural stuff.
It's and the BPRD if they were dogs.
Yeah, yeah. There
the
you
Bureau
go.
Bureau of Paranormal Research and Dogs.
Yeah, Bureau of Pet Research and Dogs. I didn't have anything else.
So this opens with a forest fire. And all the animals are fleeing, and this little Scotty Terrier goes charging past them back into the forest. And they're all like, that dog's crazy, he wants to die, what's going on? And the reason the dog goes in is because this fire's been started by a salamander, which is an evil elemental.
Right, right.
An elemental from the fire plane.
Those who play D&D or any RPG kind of know these things.
And he goes in and is trying to figure out what's going on. There's something else that's caused the salamander to be there. The other dogs in his coven call in rain to put out the fire. And then there's this discussion of sort of like, there's something there where someone is doing something supernatural and the dogs need to figure it out.
That actually sounds, by the way, that opening sounded like a good kind of opening.
It's good. I mean, this is like Supernatural or Buffy or one of those things, but it's dogs.
But doggos.
And it's... This is less dark than the other ones they've done. I feel like have always been a little bit darker. This is not goofy. Like, it is. There are dogs.
If you hear dog investigators and you're thinking Disney or something like that, it's not that. It's not Watership Down either. It's not like hardcore realism.
No.
But there's an emotional realism and the stakes are there. Like, characters can die.
Well, and all the dogs are like full on characters. They're investigators, and they're serious.
It's always been a beautifully drawn or painted series, no matter who is doing the art.
Yeah, so the artist on this one is Benjamin Dewey, who is doing sort of that painty-looking thing. It may actually be painted. And he's the guy who's doing Autumn Lands for Image. He's a perfect fit for this.
Okay.
So I really like this first issue. Dave?
I also have a detective story, only mine is set in ancient Rome. This is issue 2 of the Valiant series Britannia. I've talked about various miniseries for it in the past. The current miniseries is called Lost Eagles of Rome, and it has the guy they refer to as the Detectioner.
Yes. Detectioner.
The Detectionator.
The Detectioneer.
Well, I'm going to call him Antonius for simplicity's sake. He was like a soldier who, interestingly, kind of as way back in the first miniseries, was kind of recovering from like supernatural PTSD. And there's like kind of some slightly complicated political machinations going on behind the scene. But the premise of this series is actually fairly simple. For this one, is that he has been sent by is it Nero? I think
it is Nero,
Yeah. Himself. To look into somebody like during a battle, the imperial standards, the eagle of Rome, a trio of them that you know are considered to be so important in battle, like their banners sort of, that they literally like in some way represent his power, and they were stolen by them, and the not having them is like actually causing people to like lose faith in him. So Antonius is on the trail with a female gladiator, or gladiatrix as they call it, and he's kind of broken from what was expected to him, and he's following this trail of clues that leads him to Egypt, more specifically Alexandria, the guy who was the general or whatever, whose command was he was under the standards were under, the eagles were under when they were captured, has taken up a position there, and he has a suspicion that this guy is actually like involved in it, that it's clearly some kind of scheme to weaken Nero. Mm-hmm. And then when they get to Alexandria, there's all these other weird clues going on. There's like a false kind of like guy who claiming to be a reincarnation of Ramses, who's got kind of a cult following in the city, but is kind of like, it's like he's going around on one of those whatever you call those things that they carry around kings and stuff on,
scooters.
I think a palanquin is actually what it's called.
That's the second. That was my second guess.
But you know, it's his king scooter.
It's king scooter. That's actually palanquin is actually the Roman word for king scooter. It's such a beautiful language.
It's so great that we have these apps that can translate for us. And this guy is like kind of making outrageous claims, and the guy Antonius is wondering, like, you know, why haven't the local Romans holding the city put this guy down? This guy claiming to be, you know, like a god walking on earth.
Yeah, Dave, why haven't they?
It's a mystery
is
to
it,
which they're
is it in the book.
It is in the book. As is a sequence at the famous library, the Library of Alexandria, which is pretty cool. They actually like have to go and do like some digging up there, and so clearly Peter Milligan writing famous, you know, well-known Vertigo writer primarily.
This is probably my favorite recent project he's done.
Yeah, it's much better than that creepy one where apes had sex with people in pirate times.
I don't think that was a book. I think that was a dream you had.
And it was real. I was there. Antonius is a cool dude. He's kind of a badass detective, but he sometimes plays it a little bit more Columbo, like, you know, I'm just asking some questions.
Sure, sure.
But he also like out archeries this kind of ranking guy running the city because he just doesn't like him and he just wants to mess with his head. And so there's you know, the characters are always interesting. There's also a possible romance developing with the female gladiator, which might sound predictable, but the way it's handled is actually really interesting. It just continues to be a cool mystery. You know, this is not an era you see done very often, and let alone see done by somebody who's clearly done some research. I don't know if there were women gladiators. There might be some elements in here, including the supernatural stuff, that might be invented for dramatic purposes. But definitely the overall tone of it kind of is realistic. So, recommending Britannia once again. Randy, back up.
I'm going to go with Blackhammer Age of Dune number 4.
Mm-hmm.
I've recommended this book numerous times. It is, of course, a book that is only my recommendation, as I'm the one who discovered it.
Yes, and you were the one and only discoverer of it, yes. Even though I was really the one who popularized it. people weren't really listening when you were like, "Did you check out Blackhammer?"
It's true.
And you said it like that.
And then
I read it, and I was like, have you read Blackhammer? It's an excellent new book by Jeff Lemire.
And now we sell it all the time.
Yeah,
I think that's true. Yeah. I'm not bitter about that. Not bitter about the fact that I recommend it to you every issue and you didn't read it till, like, I don't know, 15 issues in. Anyway, this is the fourth issue of the current miniseries, which is has a big, big story turn.
Randy, it's Eisner might have helped it a little bit too.
And also probably, yeah.
Multiple Eisners, yeah. I think.
But this one is there's a big turn here. We're going to get some answers that I think we've been waiting for since the very beginning of the series.
Ironically, I am behind on it right now because I need to catch up with finish out the first miniseries before I jump into this one, which I really should do.
Also in this issue, Barbalian and Abraham Slam drink a beer together.
Oh man, he's different from James Robinson, but he reminds me of the things I liked about James Robinson in the 90s, which is James Robinson, so obviously I'm kind of mostly talking about Starman here, could write these scenes that were these kind of great down-to-earth character scenes, and then still like kind of feel like a guy who knew its history and continuity and all that stuff.
Although he did get names wrong a lot.
Did he?
Yeah.
That's funny.
He would name, I forget which one, but I remember I was on Usenet at the time. And I remember the fans, the older fans, like, I mean, they weren't that old at this point, they were their 20s, but they were all guys who had read a lot of the Silver Age, Golden Age stuff.
Right. And like, we've read Roy Thomas before.
He, like, Flash, he called him Jay Garrett.
Oh.
like a pretty easy one to get. Like, this isn't like he had Our Man's name wrong.
Right.
It was the Golden Age Flash.
Well, Randy, you have to remember, if you've read the autobiographical comics that James Robinson put out, there might have been a lot of drugs passing through his system. So getting Jay something and Gare something,
it's really close.
Is good enough.
I agree. That's what I thought at the time.
Jeff Lemire has some of those qualities, including, you know, the ability to put together good action sequences.
Hopefully, not the copious amounts of drugs.
I'm hoping. I don't know. I have no idea behind the scenes what Jeff Lemire is like.
Me
if
either.
If he is, then it's working. And keep up the good drugs.
He seemed to me, from the people I know who have met him, that he is a nice, quiet Canadian boy.
That sounds right. Although, like, when I read something like Royal City, which just wrapped this week, yep. I'm going to talk about it in a minute, there's rougher edges there. I get the impression that he as a teen might have been a little Ed Brubaker-ish.
Maybe so.
Maybe. Also, by the way, he just always works with great artists.
Yeah, Dean Ormsden is fantastic.
They're always tearing it up on his stuff, so...
Dave, what's your backup pick?
All right, my backup pick is something unusual. My backup pick probably would have been Nick's pick.
Nick picked this as his pick.
And it's the lighthearted West Coast Avengers number one. I think we'd been kind of watching this one with a mixture of trepidation and outright fear, at least if you're Randy, mm-hmm. because you West Coast Avengers was seminal for you.
Yep.
I liked West Coast Avengers. I followed the original miniseries and loved it, and then I've scattershot read stuff that followed after that. So I have a fondness for it since I did grow up with that era. Where it was essentially Hawkeye's kind of slightly like B-list team. They were all people with something a little bit to prove.
But it was Hawkeye made good. This is the thing. This is the book that was my Avengers book. Like I read right. before I read Roger Stern's Avengers. And
it was not about what a loser you are, Hawkeye. It was about like, oh man, this guy really does have this stuff.
It was a little bit about that. It was Hawkeye trying to prove that he wasn't a loser. So
in the same way, Spider-Man is always that guy. Like nobody thinks that Spider-Man is a loser, but he struggles hard.
Yeah. So he had gotten married to Mockingbird.
Yep.
And he was forming this team in the West Coast. And he's trying to get his team to be. He's always comparing it to Cap's team. He's like, he really wanted to be Captain America at this point.
Right.
He wanted to be, and so. I love Grimwald's Cap, and to see Hawkeye sort of trying to emulate him, and he's you know married to this super spy character I really loved. Like,
yep.
So much of what I love about Hawkeye and Mockingbird, two of my favorite characters, came out of West Coast Avengers. And so much I love about Avengers, which is one of my favorite teams, came out of West Coast Avengers. So Tom Brevoort hates the West Coast Avengers. He never liked it. He never liked the idea. So he has kept them down for decades.
Right. And now when they return, it's in a goofy book.
Finally they return.
And it's in a silly book that has Gwenpool in it.
So there was no way I was going to like this book.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't. That said, it's not a bad book.
Thanks for the lead-in, Randy.
I just want to get it out there that my trepidation is completely personal to me. It has nothing to do with the book being good or bad. The book is perfectly good. It's just not for me.
I'm going to backtrack and say that part of the original West Coast Avengers, as you know, I'm a fan of Wonder Man.
Yeah.
And I've rarely seen Wonder Man as well done as he was in that original miniseries. Yeah. Super awesome.
Also, Wonder Man's nowhere to be found in this, but Gwenpool makes an appearance.
Gwenpool is in it, and some other characters who I don't like. but actually, mostly characters who I was indifferent to. But who I ended up liking. This book sort of won me over in spite of it. I don't even think necessarily it's a book I'm going to be like, I'll always stay with, but I liked it better than I thought. So it begins with that kind of a technique that we've seen in, for a while now, the kind of interview in the style of what, The Office? What other shows have done this?
It's a reality show thing. It's the camera, it's what they call the... What do they call it?
Yeah, I was trying to remember what the term is. But you know what it is. Yeah, it's like they're literally talking to the camera and, you know, saying what they think about somebody or something that happened.
What's going on.
In this case, it opens right up with Hawkeye. And it's clear that he's being questioned about Kate Bishop, the other Hawkeye, which they fully acknowledge. Confusing to have two Hawkeyes. by embracing it, I think they made the right decision.
She should be called Lady Hawk and he should be called Man Hawk.
Or you could do that. That is one idea that Randy has suggested.
Or he could be Lady Hawk and she could be Man Hawk.
Now, they start right off with something that's actually a little bit silly because, like, Hawkeye is, like, seriously, he's Man Hawk is defending Femme Hawk seriously.
Let's catch it on.
just that simple. But when you kind of see what the incident was she was involved in and that she brought him in on, there's giant land sharks running through Santa Monica.
Yep.
And here's the thing. They look really cool, actually. The artist on this is Stefano Caselli, best known for Spider-Man, Edge of Spider-Verse stuff?
Spider-Man.
And in general, that run.
He did the Avengers of the Initiative stuff. He's a good artist.
Yeah, and like this art, I think, is like... It's the best I've seen from him. The expressions on it, I think especially on Kate Bishop, honestly, mm-hmm. Are fantastic.
You mean Lady Hawk?
I mean Femme Hawk. and so there is an opening sequence in which they are trying to run these land sharks, which are essentially on a stampede. and they are like, both funny-looking and cool, they are trying to route them and get them running towards the ocean. They actually stay with them for a few pages, giving it actually, for something silly, a little bit of a sense of realism. We see the rest of the team show up. There's America Chavez, who
she's like Kate Bishop's best friend, which is why she's here.
Hadn't followed before, but I liked her in this, and I felt this book, by the way, one of the things it did best was characters about whom I know nothing or very little, like America Chavez.
Gwenpool,
they get you up to speed real quick with anything you need to know.
It's a well done putting together the team.
The guy who's Kate's boyfriend, he's like some new character, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, as he puts it, he's been a superhero for about 2 minutes.
Yeah, he's got absorbing man powers.
Yeah, he's got absorbing man type powers. I wonder if they're even gonna like make some connection to it, like he's the bastard kid of absorbing man or something like that. Post shark stuff, you see kind of how the team sort of came together, how the shark incident kind of leads Hawkeye to recognize that, hey, West Coast is kind of vulnerable. Kate, maybe this is your chance to shine and lead a team. She makes a college-style tear-off sheet of for like auditions, and very much in the tradition of, I'm going to say, Legion of Superheroes. Or The Tick.
Or Mystery Men.
There's a goofy audition process thing. Now, Randy is crying tears of blood, but I thought it was kind of funny. Because it was the... I think in a way because I went into this book with no expectations. Like, it's... And I knew it was going to be goofy. I wasn't shocked when it was goofy.
If this was anything but West Coast Avengers...
Uh-huh.
I would have liked it.
Yeah, but instead it's a thorn in your side.
This is like when they turned New Warriors into a reality show. I wanted to enjoy that too, but it did what I was afraid they would do, which is turn that team into a complete joke, and I have a huge fondness for that team too.
You know, I have this feeling that they're going to keep a sense of humor about this for sure, but that there will be a little bit of seriousness. But it's going to be its own thing. This is mostly a young superheroes team. They're kind of like a goofier Champions, I think. Because as the rest of the team shows up, there's Quentin Quire, the jerky mutant from the X-Men with the big psychic powers. Yep. He's well aware of his reputation and his power level. Gwenpool does show up. I guess I don't want to say what the threat they're dealing with is... But and then there was something else. Oh, right. And they talk about, like, yes, there is a reality show element to it. Suffice to say, without getting into all the details, there is something reality showish about it. It wasn't just a affectation.
You know, if this were the Defenders
mm-hmm.
or the Champions of Los Angeles,
yeah,
I'd be okay with that. But the thing is, the Champions has been taken by Mark Waid.
Yep.
And Defenders has been ruined by Bendis. And also... The Avengers would never put up with this if they were wearing a place to protect their brand, but they're not. You know whose fault that is? Bendis. So ultimately, I blame Bendis.
He's such a baby.
I'm really mad about this because I love West Coast Avengers.
Making my pitch for the book here.
It's actually a really good book. That's the thing. That's what drives me crazy too. Like, it's a good book. If this were not West Coast Avengers, I would be recommending it. I really like this first issue.
You don't like West Coast Avengers more than like Avengers though, right?
I do.
No, that's interesting.
Yeah, I love the Avengers, but if I could have a good West Coast Avengers, I wouldn't care that Bendis had utterly destroyed the Avengers.
Interesting. You know, I feel like things are so mutable in comics that I think you can patch things. I suppose we talked about this the other week. The X-Men are probably a good example of it. Sure. Bendis even got his hands on those, and yet Mark Guggenheim or the recent Extermination comics, so Guggenheim and X-Men Gold, have managed to put out some stories that we're all into. Your West Coast Avengers are going to be destroyed and damned for next few years.
It's
going to
be decades.
No.
It's going to be a long time.
Nah. I don't think that's the case. I mean, we'll see. My guess is this is a niche book anyway, and it will have maybe a few years in it. And then, assuming sales are solid on it. And I think they should be because it's a fun book.
Well, Nick made the best comparison, I think, to this, which is Next Wave.
Mm.
It's not quite as wacky and out there as Next Wave.
It doesn't quite have the arch quality that Next Wave does, that Warren Ellis,
right. it doesn't have the Warren Ellis
little knife.
But if Next Wave were done by somebody besides Warren Ellis, I think this is what it would look like. And I think...
I forgot to mention it's done by Kelly Thompson, who is best known for these days doing Captain Marvel.
She's doing stuff. Mr. and Mrs. X.
Did she do Captain Marvel
no,
stuff?
No, that's Kelly Sue DeConnick.
All those Kellys.
Yeah. No, she's doing Mr. and Mrs. X. She did the Hawkeye series prior to this.
Yeah, yeah.
I usually really like Kelly Thompson stuff.
Yep.
I feel like she might do Zodiac Star Force over at Dark Horse. I'm not sure if that's her.
I don't know. Please write in and let us know.
But anyway, Nick had compared this to Next Wave, which I think is a good, like, if people like Next Wave, they might like this.
Yeah, weirdly, Next Wave was beautifully drawn by Stuart Immonen, and this is beautifully drawn by Stefano Caselli, so they also share a super high quality of art in here. So, like I said, I don't know that, even as the person who picked it, I don't know if I'll be following this book, but I was surprised at sort of how well-crafted it was, and so I feel it deserves a shout.
But it is 2 out of 3 managers recommend, and one the third manager grudgingly admits it's a good book.
Right.
Also, I, Nick, would like to step in just as Next Wave manager, since we're talking, and admit that Next Wave
is a sham.
Is a terrible, terrible book. I don't know what I was ever doing recommending that book.
Right. Ruined Monica Rambeau?
I, Nick.
Is that what you were saying, Nick?
It ruined Monica Rambeau.
I think I heard you say that, yeah.
Yes. I, Nick, renounce Next Wave in all its forms.
Actually, wow. This has been really a banner podcast.
It really has for Nick.
Yeah. Nick's going to be very excited when he's in tomorrow.
I do want to say again, with Next Wave, it's another one of these things that perfectly good book that I hate for reasons that are my own.
Yeah, I can back you on that one. all right, so let's go over our randos, other stuff. Yeah. So let's see. There's a bunch of stuff that I didn't get around to reading this week. I do want to mention, the second issue of the New Direction for Teen Titans is out?
Yeah, I think that's right.
It's issue 21, but it might as well be issue 2.
Yep.
Royal City, which I have closely followed for its full run by Jeff Lemire, wraps up this week. It's a very satisfying ending. It kind of, folks who followed Stephen King books before, if you ever read, he's pretty good with satisfying endings, and sometimes he'll do kind of a little tapestry of what happens to people's lives and stuff like that, and there's some of that in this, and it was a very good ending to it. It resolves kind of like the various sort of the ghostly appearances of the dead kid that was, you know, crisscrossed through it, this otherwise slice of life series from the beginning. People kind of get their resolutions, they move forward, they find, you know, where their world is heading, and it's kind of a sweet ending. There's a new Batman miniseries called Batman Kings of Fear. Randy, just remind me who the writer on this.
I missed that one.
Scott Peterson. Well, what is Scott Peterson?
He was an editor over at DC for a while.
Okay.
He's written some other stuff.
Well, really, this is a miniseries that kind of focuses on the Scarecrow, but I think what the main thing about it is that it's drawn by Kelly Jones. Kelly Jones, who on Batman is probably best known for drawing all the covers during Nightfall. He didn't do interiors, did he, Randy?
Not for the most part. He did some, but I don't think he did most.
But if you remember the thing of Bane breaking Batman's back, and it looks like Bane has 800 ribs, and
Kelly Jones.
And I told Nick earlier that Kelly Jones was like, his art is like the tall version of Sam Keith art.
Yeah.
And I was flipping through this, and I actually really think he did a bang up job. His art is the best I've seen of it in ages. The colorist treats it very well. It actually sort of focuses a little bit on Batman taking down the Joker early on, but it's kind of in service to things that will later on go on at Arkham Asylum. And it does seem like there's sort of the backdrop here, and I assume that Scarecrow will kind of exploit this, is Bruce Wayne kind of going through some angst about, like, is, you know, he's been Batman for a few years, and is he really making a difference, or is he just kind of, like, keeping things barely at bay? It's just a miniseries, so it's going to be out of continuity, I think, and so it's probably going to, like, maybe get a little more into the psychology stuff, but there is a lot of straight-up action in this issue. And, you know, Kelly Jones is also like a somewhat more exaggerated Bernie Wrightson. It's almost like if Bernie Wrightson inked over, like, Walt Simonson or something like that.
Yeah.
And there's some badass action in here. So I don't know quite what to make of it as a whole. But, again, some fantastic art, good solid story, and an interesting premise, because it looks like Scarecrow is going to, in some way, sort of lead a riot at Arkham Asylum. And it was interesting. I think that's all my stuff for this week, Randy. What else do you have?
Okay. So I want to mention Cullen Bunn's new horror book at Image, with art by Mark Torres.
Which I also liked.
Which is called Cold Spots. I don't want to give too much away, but it is about an investigator looking for his lost love and possibly daughter.
Yep, and there's some supernatural stuff in there of a creepy variety.
Yep.
This is like Cullen Bunn of, what's his horror comic, his other horror comic called?
I don't know, he's got a bunch of them.
What's the southern one, kind of painty art? That's him, right?
I don't know.
With the girl who was like the skin, the severed skin bag thing.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, man, it's over in our Dark Horse section.
Okay. You're talking about Harrow County,
right. Yeah. Is that Cullen Bunn?
Yeah, that's Cullen Bunn.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, this definitely is a...
There is a sentient skin clump.
This is creepy. It's creepy.
Yeah.
I liked it.
It's a different... a different style of horror, yeah. But it is that... It's eerie. Like, it actually does some... And there's a couple of pieces of art in there. I was like, that's creepy.
Yeah. X-Men Red, which has X-Men continuing. They're dealing with a fight in Atlantis. They're dealing with a failed mission on board a plane. It's really good. It's probably my favorite X-Men book right now, which is good because I think it's the only one continuing. X-Men
they are going to continue that during overhaul stuff.
I think that one's continuing. I hope so. X-Men Gold, which is the two-parter or the second of three parts of Storm returning home back to Africa and meeting up with an evil god who has taken over the village that she used to be the goddess from. It's also dealing with how exactly she got her hammer back.
I'm going to make a Stella got her groove back joke, but it's probably already been done a million times, so I'm not going to do it.
Daredevil 607, which sees the return of Mike Murdock. Finally,
Daredevil's oafish brother.
The way they do that is actually really fun. And Sewell is the guy who wrote a lot of the Inhuman stuff. And while I have no love for that Inhuman stuff, he is basically doing the thing that good writers do, which is grabbing your supporting characters that worked in one book and bring them into another. So he's managed to grab a few different characters from that Inhumans run bring them into Daredevil's world in a way that works.
That's cool.
There's
a lot of writers I've liked over the years who've managed to do that. Yeah, Ostrander was obviously the one.
Amazing Spider-Man number 4 is Spidey and Peter have been separated, and it seems that maybe...
kind of Superman craziness is that?
Peter kept all the responsibility, and Spidey kept all of the power. And that's not going great. And so there's sort of a something going on with that. And an interesting bad guy who is a Spider-Man D-lister, but they kind of make fun of the fact that he's a Spider-Man D-lister. It's pretty solid and fun. Die, Die, Die number 2. This was the surprise book from Kirkman and Gimple of The Walking Dead and Chris Burnham on art. It's super violent. And if you like the first one, you'll probably like the second one.
Randy, I have a question about that.
Yep.
Have we ever ordered that? Like, did we order number 2?
We did order number 2.
Okay, they allowed us to know that this was a book that exists and that we can choose numbers for.
Yeah.
Just curious.
But that's all we knew. We didn't know what was in it.
Yeah,
the covers, none of that stuff.
Just checking.
And finally, I want to mention, if you're a Trump fan, I'm sorry for everything terrible we've said on this podcast and we'll continue to say. But if you're not, this book, Mike Norton's Little Donnie Executive Privilege.
Yep.
This is a collection of his webcomics he's been doing, and...
These have crossed my Facebook many times over the last year or two, and they're really good.
So Mike Norton is the cartoonist who did Battle Pug, he did the Art on Revival. And
Serious-ass artist.
This is him imagining sort of what's going on in the hallowed halls of the White House with Trump in accordance, which includes a severely drunken-looking Bannon. Kelly Conway is a ghost summoned out of a skull. Jefferson Beauregard, the Attorney General, is actually a Mitzelplex-style dwarf who says his name backwards to disappear back in the fifth dimension. There is a...
So it lends through a lot of comic book-type tropes and stuff.
Yes. Obama at one point shows up, steals his sandwich, and yells... Sorry, Donnie, got the munchies. By the way, I tapped your phone. Deep state, deep state. Which turns out to be a lie that Donnie is telling the press room. There's a lot of sort of weird, surreal stuff.
Right.
It is all making fun of headlines. So if you go back, you'll be banging your head at all the various headlines that that you remember like, oh, I'd forgotten that horrible thing that happened.
Right, yep, this was a real. This is the real world we live in.
But it's also just really funny. So many people have taken late night comedy, all that stuff. So many people have taken shots at the Trump administration and made jokes and that kind of thing. This has a particular style and humor to it that I think it will hold up.
It's not particularly duplicated by any of those
other ones. It's somewhat surreal and over the top, and I believe it will hold up as a result of that. It's really funny, and seeing these again, I'd forgotten just how hilarious it was. So I definitely recommend this collection. It's super funny. All right. That's it for us this week for comics. We're going to be back in just a second to talk about a board game and a movie and whatever else we come up with to talk about.
Talking about comics, movies, and fame. They even talk about board games. No week is the same.
All right, so we're going to start off with a what we should probably be doing every week, but we're not, which is talking about stuff we actually sell.
Yeah.
So, Dave, talk about this board game.
Although this it had gone under my radar.
Yep.
So, you know, there's a role-playing game out now called, like, what, Heroes of Terranoth or Realms of Terranoth?
It's coming out. The role-playing game is called Realms of Terranoth.
And there's the card game coming up.
Called Heroes of Terranoth.
Right, this is from Fantasy Flight.
This is their Descent world.
Right. And this is the, this is a unusual board game called Legacy of Dragonhold. It doesn't have the Terranoth name on it, but it is absolutely part of that world, shares some art with the RPG, which is a really cool art that reminded me of things like, World of Warcraft art, or yeah, even, somewhat of the Pathfinder style of slightly exaggerated, larger characters.
Right.
And so this is a type of game I have never played before, or the closest would be almost something like, Tales of the Arabian Nights. Mm-hmm. It is a sort of storytelling, choose-your-own-adventure game, but in which you do create a character, as you do in Arabian Nights. But in Arabian Nights, I liked the game, but it also felt kind of random. Your character had all these wild sort of ups and downs, and it just kind of felt like kind of random. You know, winning wasn't the point. Here you are actually playing through a story, and it happens to be very well-written stories. I think above everything else, that's what sets this apart from, like, what it could have been. And you do create characters in it, which are... It's actually... The character creation was super fun. It's D&D-ish with a few tweaks, just like a lot of good fantasy worlds, sure, you know, whether it's Pathfinder or World of Warcraft. And, you start out, you pick a race, a class, there's a character sheet where you jot down a few notes about your background and your ideals and stuff like that, and the mm-hmm. idea is to kind of think of your character as a real character and somewhat fully formed, or at least partially formed in your head, but it's, like, super quick. Like, you could do it in, like, 20 minutes easily, or even faster if you wanted to, but I played this with my brother. You can play it with, I think, actually up to 1 to 6 players, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And you just start reading this book, and in this first adventure, you're sort of traveling through a forest, and you run into a couple of other adventurers, both of whom ended up well-defined by the end of the story, by the end of this first booklet, first adventure, and there's 6 in the game. And so what'll happen is you'll come to a decision point, and it might be something like, there was a point where we were at a clearing in the woods, and we were trying to find our way to a path out. We knew there was, like, maybe some bandits in here and some other dangers. And there was options to kind of try and figure out direction by looking to the stars, you know, in the clearing. And, like, if you had, like learning or some kind of, like, history or something like that, you could do that. If you had the athletic skill, which my orc happened to have, you could climb a tree and try and look around for the forest for landmarks from up on the tree. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes there's ones that you don't need a skill at all for. Unlike the old choose-your-own-adventures, like, or the D&D ones that I played more of, where sometimes you pick a thing and you just don't know what's going to happen. You know, you might be making the right choice, you might be making the wrong choice. Well, here you're going to have a better sense of it. There is this game-like quality to it, and it's very cinematic. So my guy, I had actually written that he had, like, some sailing experience and was, like, you know, would, like to climb, like, rigging and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, so when in this case, this is just what the game wants you to do. He's going to climb that tree and not look at the stars. He's, although the stars would also make sense for a sailor type, but he likes to climb. He's going to climb this tree. So that was the obvious decision there. And, again, really, really beautiful writing on it, like, and cool writing, because when the action happened... and you trade off. It's essentially, like, one person will, like, read, and, like, then either one can make the decision, but whoever does, the other person gets the next story decision. So they might end up kind of being in control of the scene. Like, my brother's playing, like, a character who wasn't as fighty as me, and he could have, like, he did end up at, like, suddenly, like, oh, you know, the bandit chieftain is right up in your face right now. What are you going to do?
Right.
And it's like, oh, well, it's on his turn. Well, nobody is defenseless in this game, for one thing. There's magic and stuff like that, and he had his defenses. But... one or two of the things he did kind of, like, we kind of knew they were risky when he did it, and, like, you know, he took some, like, backwash from using these rune blasts that he had, and like got injured. And but the moves that we were doing were actually kind of felt really cool. I don't know quite how to explain it other than to say that like the combat in it was fun throughout. The characters I was interested in. There was a timer of sorts that there's a sheet where you mark off like days, and every once in a while you'll get to a decision tree and it'll say like, you know, if 3 days have passed, have already elapsed, just go to this page or whatever. So it does track your time, and like essentially the clock of the world is going on whatever decisions you make. So if you choose not to follow somebody, not to help somebody at some point, well, it's a little bit like Mass Effect or Dragon Age. That things will, your decisions will change them. I suppose also a Telltale Games would be a good example. Whether you do or don't do something, it's going to change the world. And there's also, you'll occasionally, if you do something important, you'll mark off a little mark on a box, and it'll say, like, you know, if you've marked off G12 or S13 or whatever, then that's going to affect something. Anyway, super cleverly done. I don't know how they did the algorithm, but it's got, like, high production values, fun character creation, good adventure, and we've only done one of the six, and, you know, I'm already very impressed with it. I'm probably going to play the other sometime, the next one sometime this week. The next one I know is a city adventure, the city of Dragonholt itself, I think, or I think that's what it is. And I know that one is somewhat like sandboxy, so that you can move around freely in the city, but there probably is something of a time limit, like, well, you've got a week or so to stay in the city. I think there will probably be city adventures as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm kind of hyped to see it. It's interesting to see what's happening with the combination of characters we took, and I could actually imagine this playing out rather differently with different character types. I don't think I'd want to, like, I feel like it's something of a one-time playthrough game.
Okay.
But I also feel like I could almost, like, you know, break from it for a year or two afterwards, play it with different types of characters who would clearly make different choices, and still get a lot out of it. So, for people who are looking for sort of a storytelling game, D&D without all the crunch, or just something different, Legacy of Dragonholt, super cool game. It came out actually late last year, but it had just been under my radar completely.
It sounds a little bit like another one I liked, which was Near and Far.
Yeah, you know, that was more gamey. Near and Far, actually, Above and Below is the one you're thinking
above
of.
Above and Below, yes.
Although they've all had, a lot of those That Guy's games do use kind of some story element. But they were kind of flavor text in service to kind of, like, when you did the wild card options, you could go underground and have a sort of a small adventure and make a decision or two.
Yeah.
Here, the story takes over everything, and, you know, it's kind of a question of, well, which companion are you with? Do you want to ask about things? Okay. Do you want to ask them about what's in the forest, or do you want to ask them about themselves? Both will reveal stuff to you, and both will, you know, there will be stuff you won't find out. And really, like, because the characters were so well written, that when there was an option to find out more about them, first of all, I was playing an orc, and there was a female orc, and I was like, I think my character wants to know more about her because she seems cool.
Yep.
And you'll also care about them, like, whether they're what their fates are. So yeah, it takes elements of that Above and Below, but it's for sure takes them and makes a whole game out of them.
I want to mention a movie actually that we both saw.
Yep.
Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah, kind of an unusual thing. I don't think either of us are rom-com dudes.
Not generally, although I like When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
I liked,
When Harry Met Sally is so good that everybody should like it.
I like The Big Sick.
Yeah. Actually, I can agree with these. Those are both movies that kind of, like, find that serious drama, I think, underneath the cliched tropes type
you
stuff.
I think you and I will both find, like, exceptions. Like, we will find something right. Like, oh, it's a rom-com I liked.
Right.
Now, I'm a big rom-com fan, and I see a lot of them with my wife, and I'm always recommending them to Randy, and I, Nick, would like to take this time to renounce all romantic comedies and to admit that Randy was right, that most of them are pretty cheesy. Thanks, Nick.
You know what? This is somewhere between those two ends of the kind of like the fluffier type of one and the serious one. So this movie's already getting some sort of notoriety because it has an all-Asian cast, which is unusual.
And it's done super well.
It's really slickly produced. It's funny. The drama in it is dramatic.
Well,
and
I just mean box office-wise.
I didn't know that.
It's
I was going to say, like, the craft is very high. And there is a certain, like, kind of... escapist element of the side of Singapore they are showing is through the eyes of the wealthy.
Yeah.
And it's a little, it's escapist. I've actually seen a little bit of backlash against that because there's clearly more to Singapore than it shows.
Yeah.
But it's, I think that's beyond somewhat of the scope of the movie.
Well, I think the goal of the movie is twofold. The first one, of course, is to tell a fun and interesting story.
Right.
But the second one was also to prove that there was a market for Asian-led films, which yeah. Hollywood has been really bad about.
Yep.
And I know...
Well, really, any minority-led films
yeah.
that's...
Well, yeah, but we've already had, like, Black Panther sort of opened the floodgates a little bit.
Right.
And I think Crazy Rich Asians may do the same. There was, yep. There are actually, like, there are movies waiting for a green light to yeah. see how this did. The fact that it did so well and has huge ratings on Rotten Tomatoes and that kind of thing means that there's going to be a lot more variety in these movies, yeah. and that's a good thing.
I wanted to see it because, like, I had an interest in the premise, and then I was like, oh, it's at 80-something percent yeah. on Rotten Tomatoes? That's huge.
And I really liked it. It is just a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
But it's a type... I mean, and it's even not, like... We've seen fish out of water comedy before.
Yeah,
we've
seen the basic premise,
family interfering with the relationship before.
Sort of a normal girl who's like, I say girl, she's a woman who's teaching economics.
She's an economics professor at NYU.
And finds out that her boyfriend, who's going to be like, what, best man?
Best man at his friend's wedding in Singapore.
At his wedding in Singapore.
She finds out that even though they've been dating for about a year or so.
She does not know everything about him.
She did not know, yes, that he is in fact like the heir apparent of this giant mega corporation family in yeah. Singapore.
Yeah, and the family is rife with a sort of political infighting and backstabbing, and there's good people in there, and there's jerks, and there's very larger than life characters, and some are very funny.
Aquafina is her best friend.
She's great.
Steals this movie. She's so good.
And I feel like Aquafina's dad in it.
Ken Jeong is also great.
Was hysterical. Like everything he said made me laugh.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And then it, like the dramatic sort of counterpoint, the kind of real traditionalist side of the family, and the very business and status oriented is Michelle Yeoh,
who we love,
who she can bring the gravitas when you need it.
Yep.
She's like the matriarch of the family,
yeah.
and scary.
Yeah.
She scares me.
Yeah, she's really good. this was really good. I didn't know what to expect, and I because the reviews were so good is what made me want to see it. Like the trailer was solid.
Yeah,
but it's not like you say. It's not my genre.
Yep.
But seeing the reviews made me want to see it, and I was pretty happy with it. I thought it was a fun film, and I would recommend people check it out.
Yeah, I agree. It's also like it is beautifully shot. You know, it's an appealing cast. Everybody's fun, and you'll get to see the glam side of Singapore, which is, I'm like, man, what's that crazy building that's like that looks like a kanji symbol?
Yeah, that's got like a ship on top.
Yeah,
of it.
I guess I didn't know what it's. I mean, it's clearly a real thing, but I was not aware of really of its existence. That thing is cool.
No, the thing that got me was the street food, because I've heard about this. They went to this like open market where vendors
yeah.
like have been working generations to perfect this one. All they sell is one recipe.
Right.
So you go to all these different vendors, you get all this different street food, and you get this meal. And I'm like, man, I want to go to Singapore.
It was insane. I was like, we need to immediately get dim sum after
yes.
this.
Yeah. But yeah, and like all the characters are really good.
Yeah.
The lead is really good.
Yep. Don't expect it to be anything but the rom-com it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you have any capacity to kind of enjoy them, it is a good fun time.
Yep. All right, that will wrap it up for us this week. Is there anything else I, Nick, would like to say about... What else should I renounce?
Action figures.
I, Nick, do not like Jurassic Park. I've been lying this whole time. I hate dinosaurs.
Their failure to include accurate feathering on the dinosaurs
yeah.
ruined it for me.
I, Nick, can't stand Nicolas Cage. Don't like him. Don't like him at all. All right. We'll wrap it up there. Nick's never going to listen to this. And if he does, we'll know because he'll kill us.
That's true. That's true. Don't tell him, anybody. You're all in on the secret Nick joke.
Until next week.
Yo, Joe.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.